And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear here in Claire, you're independent to me, you're Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, and from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Tim Pachote, man, he hooked up a great interview with Mr. Doug Casey, good friend. Oh, he's spoken at the Freedom Summit and all over the planet, had big influence on Mark and I, and we're just like, yep, what Doug says. And then we come to find out that Doug is just, he knew a lot for a long time. If you go to today's archive, you'll see that there is a, if you go into the archive in the first hour, there's an interview that he did with Phil Donahue. Now, we've had Phil Donahue on the show, and when he found out we were libertarian and so on, man, he didn't like it none too much, and now I know why. When Doug wrote the book that is a New York Times bestseller for, like, ever, and I think it was the one, it was Crisis Management. Investing. Crisis Investing. And when he did that in the early 80s, all of a sudden, man, it's New York Times bestseller, and it's all over the place, and hearing talk about it. And if you listen to that show, it's the same as what he's going to say right now. So Doug Casey is, a treasure for all of us to understand what's happening and why, and he was yelling it and screaming it for a long time before. For over a quarter of a century, legendary investor and best-selling author Doug Casey and his team at Casey Research have been helping self-directed investors to earn superior returns through innovative investment research designed to take advantage of market dislocations, which means what I know about Doug. Yeah, you want to invest in gold mine? Guess what? He went and walked it. He's like, put a guy's, fingers dirty and stuff. He's out looking. And if you go to Freedom Fest in Las Vegas, the big draw, Doug Casey. I'm going to let Tim talk to Doug and get it all taken care of. But I just got to say hello, Doug. How are you?
Well, Ernie, it's a pleasure to be here with you. I'm speaking to you right now from Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Why?
Because I live down here a good part of the year.
Well, Cafayate, you hang out, there's a place that you guys had and land, and we have friends that bought land there, and it's just, when the zombie apocalypse will be a-coming, we'll be okay down in Cafayate. Is that where you spend most of your time?
Yeah, that's true, I do. I'm in Buenos Aires right now, but I do spend most of it in Cafayate, surrounded by high mountains and grapevines in a small aspen-like town. So it's a good place to hang out because when things fall apart in the U.S. and Europe, I can watch it on my widescreen TV, not out my front window.
Well, I know that you make your own wine down there. Is it? What do you guys call it?
Well, the red wine is a Malbec, and the white wine is a Torontés, and these are both specialties of Argentina.
Awesome. Well, I'm gonna let Tim do the interview. He's so excited when he went to Nexus to see Peter Schiff and Max Kaiser and G. Edward Griffin, Doug Casey, Patrick Byrne, Ron Paul, Judge Napolitano. Man, a guy investor like him that follows what you're doing and inspired by you, I can tell you, man, his head was spinning. So, but the Nexus conference to me was all the non-compliers. I go a few weeks later to Texas Bitcoin Conference, and that was all compliers. So that's what we're seeing right now in this cryptocurrency thing. You got the comply side that's getting all muddled up and everything, and the non-compliers streamlining to doing whatever. But I want to go back to your, well, I'll let Tim do it, but I'll certainly have some questions for you. Tim, go, man. Doug Casey, all you.
All right, good morning, Doug. So when we had met at the Nexus Earth Conference, obviously a lot has changed, even in the short amount of time. I mean, what, that was like 3 months ago? And in the Bitcoin or crypto market, I mean, a lot has changed in terms of the inertia, in terms of the momentum, in terms of us almost reaching a tipping point. So what I wanted to do is, if Ernie, if we're hooked up for this, is I have a one-minute clip from the Nexus Earth Conference when Doug gave a talk on Bitcoin that I wanted to play. So
yeah, just push the button.
All right, here, all right, here we go.
Why am I bullish, however? Okay, when you listen to Peter Schiff, he's going to give you the 100% bearish pitch. I'll give you the reason why I think there's some upside left, and I'll tell you how I think it's true. Number one, looking at Bitcoin, and I know these are all different, there's only 21 million of them that can ever be issued. Okay, everybody knows that. How many people own Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies in the world right now? I don't know if anybody knows. I heard 25 million. It's probably higher since I heard that. But 25 million is not so many people. 7.5 billion people in the world. Okay. So there's a lot of people that could buy it. The bubble could get bigger. It's a bubble right now, from my point of view. Anything goes up, and not just 10 times or 100 times since I heard about it. I mean, Bitcoin's gone up 3,000 times. This is kind of bubbly in a matter of a few years. It's not like a company that's got earnings and is growing, okay? Something goes up 3,000 times, and a lot of these things have done 1,000 or bubbly. Scares me. But I'm looking at the other side. Only 25 million people have them right now. You're hearing about them. But I'll tell you why it's going to be 250 million people or 2.5 billion people. And that's going to drive it higher. Where's the buying going to come from? I'll tell you exactly where it's going to come from. The third world.
Okay. And so I just wanted Doug to kind of respond to that, because now, I mean, so much has changed in even the short amount of time. And really, I mean, has your forecast for, you know, how big this bubble can get, you know, sort of ramped up even the timeline for this even quicker now that, you know, here we are at Bitcoin close to 18,000 as we sit right now?
Well, I'll stand by the fact that the third world is where the action is going to be, because 3/4 of the 7.5 billion people on this planet don't even have bank accounts. And they live in countries where the national currency are things like kwachas and pulas and dirhams and currencies which are worth little within the countries and nothing outside of their countries. So these people are unable to save. They're unable to improve themselves. They're all going to use Bitcoin. Because in the third world, after you have food, shelter, and clothing, the next thing you do is you buy yourself a cell phone. And they're all getting into this. So they're small. I mean, they're penny ante, but there's a lot of volume. Right now, though, what's driving it at this moment are institutions. Yep. That they're putting together ETFs, and hedge funds are getting into this and so forth. So what's happening with Bitcoin and the cryptos is there's buying pressure from the top, the very richest institutions in the world, and from the bottom, the very poorest people in the world. So it's a bubble, but it's going higher. The trend is our friend right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be taking the short side of Bitcoin right now. That would be, I think, a suicide move at the moment.
Yes. And I'm also involved, I've got to say, with crypto mining.
Oh, Doug, you mine? You're a crypto miner?
Well, not personally, but I'm a shareholder in Hive Blockchain, which has done deals with Genesis, which is the biggest.
We'll be right back with Doug Casey in just a little bit. You guys stay right there.
from the second letter of Captain Mark. Any pirate knows that commerce is communication. Markets condense oceans of information into a single price. Innovations in communication are circumventing the scrutiny of the crown. This signals a change in the coin of the realm. The crown uses digital currency to surveil, censor, seize, and destroy wealth at will, so pirate currency must protect us from this weaponized money. We need to move funds further, faster, cheaper, and without third-party observation, basing decisions on an accelerating flow of information. So pirates require nearly instantaneous transactions with no arbitrary limits on volume or artificial influences on fees. Most importantly, a pirate currency must preclude centralization. Otherwise, it will become another link in our chain to the crown. A superior currency will result in the obsolescence of the coin of the realm and the extinction of the crown itself. Trade above the grid. Join us at PiratesWithoutBorders.com. Hey, Doug, I got a couple of questions about crypto going in since Bitcoin is freaking broke right now. I mean, broke in. I've been covering it since, 9, 10, I mean, from the beginning. And it was, to me, great technology. I can see why and the philosophy of, you know, the man can kiss it. And ever since, it has been, the pressure has been to shoehorn Bitcoin into the legacy banking system. And this, you know, are you familiar with the Lightning Network and the SegWit and the fork and all that kind of stuff controversy? Are you familiar with what's going on?
Well, I don't follow that closely. That's just not the area that interests me. But go ahead. Tell me
Thinking. The thing, my point is that I had Peter Schiff on last week and Paul Rosenberg and all the guys, you know, the crypto guys, Paul, Roger Ver regularly and Voorhees and everything. And the thing is that I can see what was happening from an older I got gray in my beard guy. If they, them, those that won't leave us alone, you know, if they can maintain, enhance, and expand their control over us, they will. If they can, they will. So I'm going, crypto, how can they? Well, they'd have to this and this. And okay, well, then they do that. What? You know what I mean? That's hard for government with unlimited resources and central banks that are pissed off. You mean they wouldn't do that? That'd be wrong, you know, which is take over core development. Core development gets taken over by a bunch of guys that are paid by Blockstream that were funded by XA and insurance subsidiary investment of whatever, Henry De Castries, which is the chairman of the Bilderberg. And I'm going, yay. Well, I didn't have to scratch very hard for that. So now we're looking at this limit on the block size and what's causing all these big giant transaction fees now and so on, that Bitcoin Cash said, nah, heck, we're going over here. So Roger Ver and friends go over and make it really cheap again to be able to transact Bitcoin because they don't have this limit on how many transactions you can do every 10 minutes. Well, here comes Segregated Witness, which was software that allowed for all these layers of banking, like Patrick Burns trying to do with T0, all this, you know, the transaction is the settlement. Well, they're going to take this Lightning Network to put it on top. They got a problem. Oh my God, yes, the transaction fees are so big and you need a Lightning Network. And where do the banks reside? On that next level. They're turning Bitcoin into the reserve system or something. They're making coin. A place for the banks.
It's what Doug talks about, the Fed coin.
Yeah, it's GoldmanSucks.gov coin. I can see it coming. And it's going to shoot to the moon? Yeah, for the same reasons you said. Absolutely. With approval. They're going to make you use it. I mean, you know, so that's my concern. The technology can be freedom, but it's also weaponized money. All right, here we go.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
They don't need no stinking row ads. Where's my flying car? Well, I tell you what, you know, Doug's out where you might need one. You know, this one thing, Mr. Doug Casey, you know, the international man, you know, go ahead and pimp your international letterhead and so on. Tell us what we should be knowing from you, Doug.
Well, look, the most important thing I can tell you right now is that people should be buying my novels because I've had a lot of good fortune writing nonfiction books about the economy and things of that nature. But there are a lot of things that you can say in fiction that you can't say in nonfiction. So Last year, I wrote a book called Speculator, part of a series where I'm reforming the unjustly besmirched reputations of six highly politically incorrect occupations. So last year was Speculator, where our 23-year-old hero gets involved in a Bush war in Africa while he's making a couple $100 million. And this year, he becomes drug lord, where he does become a drug lord, both with legal FDA-type drugs and, more importantly, illegal DEA-type drugs. We explain how the drug business works, how you do it. And next year, we're going to get more wild and woolly with Assassin, as he becomes an assassin. So then it ramps up from there.
Oh, so ramps up from there. Man, you just want to...
Sounds pretty boring.
Yeah, you're painting over that bullseye on your forehead. What, you don't get enough attention?
Well, Ernie, first of all, nobody gets out of here alive. And we live in an entertainment economy. So at this point, I figure, what do I have to lose? Regrettably, I'm 71 years old. So, although, on the other hand, if Ray Kurzweil is right, and we can live indefinitely, if we can live just another 20 years, perhaps I'm being foolish. But anyway.
Hey, no, you got the resources to do it. Do it. You seem like you're a lot spryer and healthier, you know, in the last couple of years, man. You eating right? You're doing well?
Well, you know, I've got a 3,000-square-foot gym in Cafajate, and I like to use it. So, and I've always been a great believer in the Latin saying, mens sana in corpore sano, which is to say a sound mind and a sound body. But at the same time, the second law of thermodynamics is always working against all of us. So, look, we just do the best we can.
Well, you're going around the world, international man, around the world for investments, around the world for places to live. You know, I'm wondering, what are you trying to get away from? What's the philosophy that you're living under and you think other people should emulate?
Well, here's the problem. It's that most people are like plants. They're born in one place and they stay in one place, which is not a good survival strategy for a human being, to act like a plant, or for that matter, to act like a medieval peasant. They're born in some village, and they've always heard that there might be dragons over that hill, and so they never go over there because they're afraid. So it's incumbent upon all of us to see as much as you can in other parts of the world. There are more opportunities. I'm always looking for on-level playing fields. You stay in the United States, you're on a level playing field. There's millions of people that have your background and the same amount of money and experience and everything. But you go to Africa, you're on an on-level playing field where you're way ahead of everybody else, and you can use that to your advantage.
And how I first found out about Doug is when I found out about the perpetual traveler lifestyle, and I was reading books on that, and I think that's how I first came across. It was probably the International Man blog several years ago. And I think it is important to have political diversification. I was looking into, you know, how do I get a second passport and all this other stuff. And luckily my wife is from Canada, so she, you know, will be taken care of, and so are my kids. But now I need to figure out a game plan for myself over here, because I see, you know, the financial crisis that eventually is coming can happen in one of many different ways.
Is it eventually or is it here?
And I think what's most tricky for people to understand is that they see, oh, you know, people like you and me, we're just, you know, doomsday sayers, but they just don't realize all the other things that are going on right now. Like, you have central banks in, whether it's in Switzerland, that are printing up money out of thin air and buying the S&P 500, or whether you have the Bank of Japan printing up money to then buy the Nikkei 100, or whether you have, you know, all these different shenanigans going around the world. So one of the scenarios that I'm looking at is, you know, you could have the S&P 500 going up to the moon, but still be in a depression, just like what happened in Germany. And so it's very, I think we're in a very tricky situation right now. And if you had to, you know, speculate as to what way it was going to happen, do you think that we'll have some sort of maybe deflationary crisis first, where, you know, asset prices are going down, and then the central banks.
Yeah, give us a roadmap, Doug. I want to know exactly.
In 5 seconds. No, sorry.
Well, look, the analogy I like to use is that we entered a gigantic financial hurricane in 2007. And we went through the leading edge of the hurricane in 8 and 9 and 10. And we've been in the eye of the storm now for years as these governments all over the world, all of them, the Chinese, the Americans, the Europeans, Japanese, and all these little countries, have printed up scores of trillions of currency units to pour oil on the water. But when we go out through the trailing edge of the hurricane, it's going to be much different and much longer lasting and much worse than it was back in 2008 and 9. So that's the way I see it. It's very serious. These idiots are actually going to destroy the world economy by printing up currencies by the bushel basket.
I got a question for you, Doug. I'm sorry to interrupt your monologue, but this is good. I want to know right now. All right. Silver is so low, and I don't know, it could go lower. I'm sure I've had guys on say, man, they're saying $10. So I'm going, okay, but man, it's a falling knife. I'm like, you know, should I take some of my crypto profits and buy me some silver?
Yes, that's a very good trade right now, because I was at a gold and silver conference in San Francisco about a month ago, and it was supposed to be about precious metals and mining stocks. Nobody wanted to talk about that. They all wanted to talk about cryptos. So what you want to do, I mean, sure, the trend is your friend. And that's the argument for staying in cryptos. But at the same time, you want to be a bottom fisher. Buy stuff when it's cheap. Buy straw hats in the winter. Buy umbrellas when it's not raining. And now is the time to buy precious metals and mining stocks. They're really very, very cheap right now. And as these governments create many, many trillions of oil currency units, there are going to be other bubbles besides the bubble.
We're just going to go right through the break with Doug Casey, because lots to yak about. Go to top left of freedomsphoenix.com for the live stream, and you can hear every little thing. We'll sum up when we come back. We won't let you, the live audience, miss anything, but we don't want to miss a moment with Doug Casey, the international man, Casey Research. Just look up Casey Research. Okay, there we go, Doug. I'm sorry. Continue your thought. I don't want to interrupt you.
Oh, no. Don't worry, Ernie. It wasn't a cosmic breakthrough.
Well, the thing is that you go to these, to everybody, of course. All right, I'll give you an example. You know Mark Victor, right? You remember Mark.
Sure I do.
Mark's son is 18, I think, now, and he calls me last week, and he goes, hey, Ernie, you remember when you gave me that Bitcoin? Yes, I do. And I remember I told you, you know, make sure you keep this phone and make sure you write down these seed words and make sure, did you do that? Well, no, I can't find the piece of paper you made me write down. And is there a customer service number I can call? So I'm just like, you know, this is the point. And that's where the Lightning Network and the banks and all going to come in. They're going to, I realized what was going to happen. So I got BitcoinCustomerServices.com, BitcoinCustomerService.org, Bitcoin, I just did it out of principle. Now everybody that's in Bitcoin got pissed off I got it. And I'm going, na-na-na-na-na-na-na, because that's what it's going to come down to, is customer service. And I'm feeling like they want to make it difficult and expensive, but here come the banks, ta-ra-ta-ra, we're going to make Bitcoin work, when they're the ones that made it not work. You know, what is the inside cryptos? I know you're much higher above your orbiting satellite, keeping an eye on the major trends of whatever, but do you have a particular favorite crypto, or you just look at them in general as away from the man?
Yes, I don't get into the trenches with this stuff, because I'd be competing against people who have great technical excellence and knowledge. And so, no, I don't do that. I'm just playing the major trend. I don't know whether you want to buy Ether or Ripple or Bitcoin. I'm not sure which one, or Litecoin. I don't know. I own these things, incidentally. And my co-author on the novels, John Hunt, it was about in August, I gave him $100,000, and he's turned it into $430,000 since then.
Yeah.
So it's been a pleasant experience.
Well, are you feeling that it's going to, you know, it's definitely a bubble, but like you say, there's so many on the planet that will benefit from, this is why you heard in the break, the second letter of Captain Mark. Oh, you'll dig this, Doug. Go to piratewithoutborders.com. Piratewithoutborders.com is the decentralization of everything. It's our, you know, you have Freedom's Phoenix, and it's kind of like the newsy and left, right, everybody kind of, here's your radar screen. But Pirates, you want to know what the hell my real philosophy is? Go to Pirates. And Captain Mark, as in Mark and Reprisal, is writing letters. Well, the second letter is on cryptocurrency, what it needs to be pirate currency. Like you, I don't get into technical detail. I go, yeah, in the end, let me tell you what it does. There's anonymity. You know, there's security. There's no arbitrary limits on volume that has artificial influences on cost. I mean, that's what they're doing in this, you know, how many transactions they can do just for the miners to be the bankers. So this is, to me, it's playing out exactly as you depicted in the Phil Donahue interview, what's coming and why. And crypto has to be taken over by the man, and they're going to say it's GovCoin and everything else is illegal. And I'm going, all right, but you're not thinking like Doug, where it's international. There is a bunch of other countries. It doesn't have to have the blessing of the United States. And that's what I want to lead off with when we come back here, is about how the rest of the world operates. We'll be right back.
At amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Yeah, Mr. Doug Casey's going to help us. We got a young investment advisor here, Tim Pachote, libertarian advisor, whipping ass, coming out with all kinds of good iron dids. And that big thing is that, yeah, all these new crypto rich guys, how do I legitimize my money? Whatever the hell that means. You know, I use it without somebody taking it from me or putting a gun to my head is what it means. You know, but I'm going, there is an entire planet out there, and 62 miles up, you get 100 kilometers up, you're out of anybody's sovereignty over you, kind of, I'm free and suck it. So I'm going, all right, to these guys that are young, the future is just laid out before them, and technological advances, oh my goodness, we're going to be mining us some gold on some asteroid, but I don't want to get paid in gold. I want something weightless like a crypto or something. I'm not hauling around my treasure. But, you know, in the future, what should we be looking at principally, Doug? And I'm going, so a libertarian advisor here, as you're going around the developing world looking for opportunity, you know, tell them what you're looking for. What's the principle? You know, you need equity. You need an advantage. You need to, you know, a smart guy with some contacts and he knows a guy. And, you know, what should we be looking here, or should we be looking overseas? Help Tim understand what he should be sharing with his clients.
Well, a lot of the things that I do are not really suitable for the average guy. For instance, in February, I'm going to go to the Solomon Islands, which is about the most backward country on the planet. It's like a standard deviation below anything in Africa. And I'm going to meet with the prime minister there.
Where's this?
The Solomon Islands.
Solomon, okay.
They're in the South Pacific. They're only famous because that's where Guadalcanal is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a chain of about 950 islands, and the people from there literally still swing from vines. I kid you not. So I'm going there to talk to them about how they can turn their country from the most backward in the world into Singapore on steroids and do it in only a generation. So that's my hobby, going to third world countries and doing that type of
thing. Okay, so where's the money-making opportunity? We want to follow Doug and go change the Solomon Island.
Well, if we take the Solomon Islands public, Nah. That means we're going to sell shares in it in New York. So you can buy those shares.
Or now you can even ICO it on Patrick Byrne's T0 platform and cut out the banks.
All right, no, this is breaking news to me, man. Okay, Solomon Islands, they're building Caseyville or something. I mean, are you building a business? You're trying to get them to do a governmental structure in such a way that they could have foreign investment, or you're looking to do factories, ports? I mean, what are you thinking of doing?
No, much more radical than that. I'm talking about taking the country itself public and replacing their parliament with an international board of directors and shares in all the government's assets to the people. And those are what's going to go public.
On the blockchain!
So this is quite radical. And I've done this in 10 countries around the world, never with success, but always with lots and lots of interesting anecdotes that I can retail at cocktail parties, because they're pretty unbelievable. My preference, of course, is talking to military dictators, because they can actually make a decision.
Yeah, no, I remember, you know, a lot of your efforts and so on, it's been, you know, how are you going to, you just know the right guy to, you know, talk to. It's always the guy, or the family of guys, or the industry guy, or some guy. So you're kind of the mind, you just bypass the government and get to where the real power is.
The guy with a gun.
Yeah, the guy with a gun. Where is the real power? When you go to these countries and so on, I mean, what are you looking for?
Well, I was in Zimbabwe last year, and I met with every minister in the country and pitched this deal to them. I didn't get to meet with Mugabe because he was in Singapore for medical reasons. My mistake was not having met the generals. Stupid mistake. I knew better than that, but there's just not enough hours in the day, because the generals are the ones that always take over these countries. That's the key to keep in mind.
So you go to I didn't know the islands had any generals. I mean, you know, when you go there, are you're doing a campaign to the people? Is it like you're on, you know, whatever television they got, say internet, or you're picking certain individuals in Solomon Islands?
Well, most of these people don't even have that stuff.
Yeah.
But the way you play this is that you go from the top down, talking to the president or whoever, and all the members of parliament and the top people, top businessmen, top leaders in different areas. And you also go from the bottom up with radio and TV and newspaper ads and meetings to get the people on your side from the bottom. So this is how you overthrow a government. you don't do it the way Frederick Forsyth described in Dogs of War. That's very 60s, and it doesn't work anymore. You've got to use modern technology. You don't blow up the radio station. You build a couple of new radio stations.
Well, this effort that you're doing, and when you say take them public on Wall Street, you mean it. You mean like an IPO? I mean, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean.
Oh! Okay. How likely you think you'll be able to do this?
Because, as you know, Ernie, I don't believe in government as an entity. It's purely destructive. It serves no useful purpose in today's world. So the best thing we can do is commercialize these countries so people stop thinking politically and start thinking economically. And all the government's assets become shares that they own and they can trade. Which frees the capital up. It's no longer dead capital. Everything government owns is dead capital.
Okay, so in this initial public offering, are these islands, which there are gazillions of them, can they be sold? I mean, can somebody, you know, private property go and buy in Doug Casey Necker Island of Campari?
Well, you might recall several months ago, Roger Ver did a press release.
$100 million in crypto. We could buy enough some sovereignty or something as a Solomon.
It was actually at the Nexus Earth conferences when he unveiled this, and I have it all on videotape. I just happened to be streaming. He was going to give a presentation on Bitcoin versus Bitcoin Cash, and he goes, "You know what? I've got something a little bit more interesting to talk about." And he goes, and he gets into his country.
So is that part of this? Is that to say? Is that what you guys are working on? Is that part of this?
No, I've been doing this for 30 years.
Yeah, okay.
It's got nothing to do with what Roger's doing, but I'm very pleased to see that he's doing it. And however much money he and his group had then, they have three times more now.
I know, God.
This is the best thing about the crypto revolution. It's that the main people in it have been libertarians. And in the past, libertarians have always been poor as church mice. Now, a lot of them have a lot of money.
Yeah, I remember in the 90s, it was a lot of the tech guys. They wrote the program of whatever, and this one guy started developing Oceania, you know, out off of Panama. Do you remember Oceania, the project? You know, floating city thing and stuff?
I know, all those things were complete disasters.
Yeah, and, all comes down to how do you do the government? And it's like, you know, the Constitution was three times thicker than the laws, and I'm going, yeah, it needs to be private. I don't want to be in a commune. How are you doing it to where private property with your government by IPO is going to run? I mean, how are individual rights protected, or are they? I mean, give me your spiel.
All property is privately owned. End of story. I mean, Ayn Rand had it right.
Go ahead.
If you're going to have a government, since government is pure force and force is not good, then the government ought to be restricted to three things only. That's an army to protect you from bad guys outside, police to protect you from bad guys inside, and a court system to allow you to adjudicate disputes without resorting to force. Now, that's the most a government should be, but I'd say
the crown. We'll be right back. The crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories, while I say these hobgoblins are imaginary. I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find.
Tim's going to play a clip into the show. Tell us what you're going to be doing.
So I've got the Phil Donahue clip where he's reading the last paragraph of your book, and then he's trying to make you get defensive on it, and then you're like, yes, well put. And then the audience starts clapping or kind of laughing because they were expecting a different response from you, and you're like, yeah, they nailed it.
Yeah, that's one thing, Doug, is there's always that pressure to shame you. You know, that's what I knew they were going to do with Ron Paul. They're going to try and go, well, you're really libertarian. He goes, yeah, and you're really fascist. Screw you. I mean, you know. So I knew he was not going to run away from it, embrace it, and the response from the people was going to be a lot different than what the lamestream media, the media so last century, thought it was going to be. And I'm saying that this revolution started forever ago, but I mean, it became, man, boots on the ground during the revolution of 07 and 08. And the rest of it's just politics. But I'm just going, yep, here we go. So when you're talking about taking this philosophy, hey, we can be in a warm weather. What's the climate like in Samoa? Now, what state are we
Solomon
looking at?
Islands.
Solomon's.
I'm sorry, Solomon's. So what, California?
It's tropical South Sea Island. Typically about 80, 85 degrees. Crystal clear waters. It's
so
very nice.
And you said how many islands?
About 900 and something.
Okay, so you got hundreds of islands out there. Are any of them uninhabited?
Oh, undoubtedly, because there are only 200,000 natives in the whole country, and they basically all live on Guadalcanal.
All right, so this is a project, fun project. Is it developed? How long have you been working on this?
Oh, this is recent, but I've done a dozen of these things in other countries in the past. Haiti, Zimbabwe, Suriname.
Well, who's your opposition? I mean, who comes and stops? Who messes it up?
It's the guys right under the president, usually, because they're the ones that are doing the big stealing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to see any changes at all.
So is there a, because of what? The internet?
Is getting in on their gravy train of...
Well, no, I know why. I'm just wondering how you would combat it.
Well, that's always a problem. Listen, I do this for my personal amusement, not because I hope to succeed. But who knows? I mean, these people in these backward dog shit countries have bought every stupid idea that's come down the pike for the last 100 years. Why shouldn't they buy from me too?
Yeah, they might as well get an economics lesson. What the hell? They go, hey, we could have done that. Let's do that again. Where's Doug? Come back.
I also saw your panel on Nexus. I didn't see this one live, but it was on the universal basic income, and it was you and Jeff Berwick and just destroying the two socialists on the panel. So that
okay, here we're coming back.
They were embarrassing idiots, weren't they?
Yes. All right, here we go.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Farum.
I want to break free from your lies.
Lies, 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 lies. I want to break free from the lies. Uncover the secrets, expose the lies. So we do here at freedomphoenix.com. Declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock. You don't even need to do it with me. You can do it all by yourself. This is how you do it. You go, ah. Declare my independence. How easy it was. No government form. No government form unless it's a stock share. You know, we'll work about on that. All right, Tim has another clip. Go ahead, man.
All right, so I've got a clip from the 1981 Phil Donahue show with Mr. Doug Casey. And in this clip, basically, he's reading the last chapter of the book that the author or the publisher wanted to ban from the book or not include in the book. But here we go.
You've got a chapter in here which tells your story. In fact, I understand your publisher wanted you to take it out.
That's true.
It's kind of a polemic, if I may say. I mean, it's a parable. It's a speech. Here's your final paragraph. Bear in mind that a love of America, you say, and its ideals does not need to indicate a love of America's government and the goals of its administrators. So what you're in effect doing is you're giving America permission to disagree violently with their government and not to acquiesce to its financial, to some of its statements, especially its financial ones.
Well put.
Okay, here's what troubles me about that, Mr. Casey.
Yeah, I watched that. Ernie had me watch the other day. We were out looking for land, and he's like, you know what? If you've not seen the Phil Donahue interview, you've got to go back and watch it. So I watched it 2 days ago, and that part I just really loved because he was trying to. So many times people want to make, you know, libertarians or, you know, anarcho-capitalists, they want to make us get defensive and try to change our views. But, you know, the answer is, you know, not to bring it back to Trump, but is to, you know, double down on what your true beliefs are. Double down on who you really are, because that way you don't have to defend anything. So I really loved that. Doug was just sitting there like, yeah.
Yeah. Tim was a big Trump pusher, man. We do on Thursday, we do Trump Report for 2.5 years. I'm like, you're still voting? But the other guys, man, you got to give me your Trump thing, Doug. Go.
Well, I don't believe in voting because I don't believe in the state. And I've never voted. Well, that's not exactly true. When I turned 22, I idiotically voted for Richard Nixon because he seemed better than George McGovern, but I learned my lesson in those days a long time ago. And I give people reasons why they shouldn't vote. It just encourages them. I mean, it doesn't do any good. Your vote doesn't count. It just gets your name in another government computer bank. I'd like to see the system go away. I mean, suppose they gave a war and nobody came. That'd be wonderful. Or a tax that nobody paid. That'd be great. Or an election that nobody voted. I mean, that would disenfranchise the government. Wonderful.
And one a thought that I've had is that I have not, you know, Ernie, I really have only known him really for about the past year and a half. So, you know, as I've been hanging out with him more and more, I've started to obviously
get infected.
Yeah, start getting infected by this by this train of thought. But, you know, I only wanted Trump to win, so it's like, all right, you know, we're gonna stop the TPP, you know, we're gonna be able to keep the guns for a little bit. But he isn't. But what all these idiot Republicans, and I'm not talking about this audience who is obviously a lot more sophisticated than the average audience that's out there, but I did not vote for him thinking that he was going to go change anything or he was going to go fix anything, because there's nothing to be fixed. The system is so broken that there is no way of fixing it. And so I've already proclaimed that I'm not going to vote next election, because right now, the problem, you know, just because Trump got elected, you know, you could elect Ron Paul. Even Ron Paul right now could not fix anything. You could elect Jesus right now. He could not fix what's going on. And I just see that the hole that the Federal Reserve has gotten us into, there's no way to get out of it. So I'm focused on how do I protect myself? How do I protect my clients? How do we build up an economy, whether it's through the blockchain, which has the power to literally overthrow these governments? How do we create communities where, you know, we don't need to necessarily convince everybody. We only need to convince, you know, 1-3% build their own communities. And when everything goes down, goes to hell in a handbasket, which at some, which in my opinion, in your opinion, is basically inevitable at this point. And so I'm really encouraged by what you're trying to do, going to other countries and overthrow them with radio towers to get them to think in terms of freedom.
You know, my thing, Doug, it's real clear. I go, where do I got to go to be free? Moscow, Havana, Detroit. I mean, wherever government goes away, they go, oh, Detroit. We have a wealthy friend that originally came from Detroit. And she was going, you know, I'm just so distraught. You know, Detroit is so, I go, good. I go, where do you think Freedom's Phoenix comes from? I mean, from the ashes, the Phoenix will come from where there's ashes. Detroit's ashes, Moscow's ashes, Havana's ashes. So I'm going, you know, Solomon Island ashes. So this is where you have the greatest opportunity. You know, where the, what does it you say, you know, something like where the bullets are flying, the money's being made or something? I mean, do you go look for controversial areas?
Absolutely. In fact, if you want to travel someplace, the best places to figure out where to travel are the places that are on the State Department's danger list. They're usually the safest places in the world to go. Like, for instance, one time when I went to Israel, I went there during the Second Intifada, and it was actually the best time to go to Israel because the hotels were empty. I was the only person at Masada, and if I'd gone there during normal times, it would have been impossible with the lines and everything. And it was safe because the Israelis were looking out for everything. So that's typical of everything. You know, go to the places that the average guy thinks are dangerous because he's wrong.
Okay, now, I'm sorry, go ahead, Tim.
What would be the quote-unquote most dangerous place you've been, or at least from the standpoint of the mainstream media saying this is a dangerous place?
New York City.
Well, let's see. The last two places that
Chicago
that I mentioned where I've talked to the government were Haiti, which is actually quite dangerous these days. I used to go to Haiti in the 70s when it was a delightful place, actually, and safe. But now it's not. It's it's really Mad Max stuff in Haiti. Zimbabwe is not dangerous, though, surprisingly. I don't know. What is dangerous in the world today? I mean, you go to the wrong part of Washington, D.C., 10 blocks from the White House, and your odds of getting killed there are much better than they are most places in the third world.
Well, this is... What are you looking for now that you, like you say, you're over 70, man, you know, and you're tall, still good looking. So you're going around enjoying it. What's entertainment for Doug? Just watching the show unfold before you and making money? Or is it making fun of? I mean, how do you enjoy your later life, man?
Well, basically, I'm writing these novels. And so, you know, that keeps me intellectually stimulated, speculator, drug lord. An assassin, which is where it's going to start getting really wild and woolly next year. So I do that. Unfortunately, I'm now too old to play polo, which I did for many years.
I saw you play polo. You the man.
Man's got to know his limitations, though. But on the other hand, I'm not old enough to play golf. So I'm kind of in that athletic twilight zone.
Okay, it's been great talking to you. I want to make sure that people know how to get hold of your information, your perspective, your community, because Doug Casey has a community. I mean, the people that subscribe to your newsletters and follow everything that you do and where to go and where, yeah, just take my money, Doug, and make me richer. You know, how big is that community?
Well, about 300,000, actually. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo! So it's pretty big.
Yeah, you could go populate the islands. Yeah. The PiratesWithoutBorders.com. We're just building our own island. We build a ship. It's a big, giant airship, rocket ship, ship. You just take a look at it. It's fun, man. We're just, but it's taking the technology and putting it to work. We're like, look, what if you had energy? What if you had this power? What if you had, what if you had, what if you had? Well, let's build it. So that's what we're doing. And just, you know, certainly the plans and everything we just released yesterday on Blender, the plans to it. You know, you can 3D print the ship and everything. So we're having a lot of fun. But Doug, are you going to go to Anarchapoco this year? Is that one of your stops?
No, it's not. Because that would be preaching to the choir.
Well, where do you go to, you know, you have opportunities to go to these different conferences and so on. Everybody's begging for you. But what is it that draws you? What are you looking to accomplish?
I don't know. I can't help myself but look for more opportunities. The only reason I went to that Nexus conference where Tim and I met in Aspen is because I live in Aspen during the northern summer. So all I have to do is just drive up the road to do a thing there.
Did you have a good, come on, man. You met the right guys. That was a rocking and rolling whatnot conference.
No, I'm very glad I went to that conference. And I may go to the next gold show in Vancouver next month. It's a long way from here in South America. But I don't mind flying that much. I can watch movies on the plane.
Okay, real quick, we're going into the archive here, but what I want to do is I want to give you an opportunity to tell all the peoples, your websites and such, I know they're listening, go ahead and give out your websites where they get your newsletters and so on, and the Solomon Islands and novel writing, that's your latest endeavors?
They are indeed. So we have lots of free blogs, which are actually quite good. At kcresearch.com, at internationalman.com. And, of course, the books are on Amazon, but you can get them directly from us as well at highgroundbooks.com.
Okay. And the last question I had is, will you guys be issuing passports in the Solomon Islands? Because I know that Roger Ver, that they won't be issuing passports.
Well, it's a great way for backward bankrupt little countries to generate some cash. And a country like the Solomons wouldn't be as good a passport as places like St. Kitts or Dominica. They peddle those for about $125,000 plus fees. In the Solomons, that passport would be worth about $50,000, is my guess. But it's worthwhile having, because unless you have a second passport, if the U.S. government takes your passport away from you, you are trapped like a lobster. So you must have a second passport in today's world.
And, wow. And that's basically how I discovered you. Probably 25 years old, I was looking at the writing on the wall, thinking that it was probably going to be, you know, another 4 years of Obama at that point, and then another 8 years of Clinton. And I was like, you know, we need to develop some contingency plans here. As a young guy, I'm not a plant, like you were saying. You know, I need to move around. So I moved from New York to Arizona to get a little more freedom, and now trying to convince my wife of, hey, you know, if moving somewhere else, you know, means X amount of savings and taxes, or you get X amount more purses, then I'm trying to put it on terms she can relate to, then maybe this will be worth it.
Let's go to Philippines. You can have a Malamarcos's, you know, shoe collection. I'm sorry, go ahead, Doug.
It's interesting to comment, Ernie. I mean, the Philippines is great for a lifestyle choice, but if you want to make money by going abroad, you've got to go to a backward place. So I'm a big fan of Africa, because most people are unaware that demographics being what they are, by the turn of the next century, 45% of all the people in the world are going to be Africans. So it's good to get ahead of that.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. You know, it's kind of like when Jen Rogers had his, when Charles Goyette, we'd have him on every week, and I'm calling him from all over the world on Wednesdays. Well, when he had his small girls, he taught her Mandarin and Chinese, little blonde girl go around speaking Mandarin. And he was like, you know, we got to see be where the markets are going. Well, he saw China. Well, what do you see about China and their Silk Road and their expansion in the South China Sea and North Korea and the geopolitical Russia BRICS versus the Western, the blah, 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 blah. But these guys just all jockeying. They want an extra leather chair at the mahogany table to, you know, joint rule everybody, or they want to rule on their own, or you don't care.
Look, the Chinese understand that you become powerful through economics, not through the military. The U.S. government is bankrupting the U.S. with this massive and counterproductive military that we have going around antagonizing people. Now, the Chinese, with their one-road policy, this is going to be the Chinese century coming up, no question about it. And I think it's criminally dangerous what the U.S. government is doing, antagonizing the Russians, antagonizing the Chinese. It serves no useful purpose except to bankrupt us further.
Well, I mean, it's a useful purpose for the military-industrial new world order and central bank and we rule you club to make more money. I mean, you know, if it's that.
Well, we also have guys like Steven Mnuchin at the Treasury threatening to kick Russia and China off the SWIFT system. Like, are you kidding me? They're doing everything they can to get off the SWIFT system, and here you are threatening them with the SWIFT system. I mean, these idiots don't even realize that they're digging their own grave right now. And you know, if they had come out openly and said, "Hey, we're going to try to get off the system," we would go and bomb them. And here we are threatening them with getting off the system. And I can't.
They go,
the
"Thank
level
you."
Of stupidity is just unbelievable.
No,
right,
you
now.
Didn't quit. We fired you.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, Tim. You're absolutely right. The Chinese and the Russians and other countries are going to set up an alternative to the SWIFT system and the U.S. dollar. And the U.S. Look, once that happens, forget about it. Then the U.S. is really going to go downhill in a death spiral.
Well, we've always, you know, predicted, I'm sure you have for decades, you know, the petrodollar is going to go, it can't survive, the blah, 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 and all they needed was just any competition. Do you see that come? I mean, God, you can't. Yeah, we all see it coming forever. Is the end nigh for the petrodollar?
Yes, it is, and I'm surprised that there hasn't been a bloody revolution in Saudi Arabia. And if that happened, of course, the U.S. would use it as an excuse to invade. You know, the old saying, what's our oil doing under their sand? So, big trouble this way comes.
And now, one of the benefits I see of cryptocurrency, you have, I forgot the prince's name, like Prince Bin al-Talib, the guy that owns Twitter and Citigroup. Right before he was face down in a Riyadh hotel in the Ritz-Carlton, about 2 weeks before, he made the comment, you know, why would anybody need Bitcoin? Bitcoin's a fraud. And then 2 weeks later, he had $35 billion of his assets seized. I'm like, well, that could be
that's
a use
why.
Case. And then also, that's the reason why you have a second passport or money that, you know, your government can't necessarily get a hold of.
You know, that's one thing, Doug. How do you feel threatened personally by these guys? Anything that you do? Are you John McAfee with guards and M16s around you? Or are you just, you know, I'm good?
I only feel threatened when I'm in the United States. When I'm abroad, I feel quite free because all these other governments see me as a welcome guest, a tourist who's to be cultivated, a rich guy who you want
to
get on
spend
your
his
side.
Money there. Yeah.
But the U.S. government sees me as a milk cow or a threat. So I don't like being in the U.S. Very much anymore.
Well, you know, the travel restrict, you know, even the TSA thing. And so, well, we're going to, if you get pre-TSA and you give your DNA sample, we'll let you go through without having to take your shoes off. It's just all theater. And for us older guys, I remember in 07 when I was traveling around a lot during the Levolution, there was this young couple in their early 20s with two little kids, and you take your shoes off of the nice man as he wands, and I'm going, oh my God, it's like training for Papers, Please, Naziville. I'm like, oh my, it's
actually
a psyop.
Actually, leaving Nexus, Tim Fry of Roberts & Roberts gave me a silver round, so it was an actual silver bullet, and that got confiscated by the TSA Gestapo, and I'd already opted out of the screening, so I was already making myself a mark there, but I mean, they acted like, you know, here I am trying to like sneak bombs on a plane. I'm like, you guys have all the bomb testing equipment right there. Like, this is a piece of silver. And that's the real reason that these TSA screeners are there. They want to condition you to not leave the country with gold and silver.
Hey, Doug, can you spend a little more time with us?
Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear! Oh, the feared individual! I just start a country, because I can. Mr. Doug Casey. Yeah, we just keep him yakking. It's like, yeah, I know, Doug, we do the same thing with Peter Schiff. Yeah, I'll just be on for a half hour, and I just turn off the brakes, and he just keeps going.
Yeah, we just mentioned gold money.
And then... yeah. So, Doug, I'm telling you, man, we're excited about your excitement. You know, this is, you're feeling pretty good about the future in light of all the crap. Why? What does your optimism come from?
Well, two things, basically. To do with the average person. Number one, the average guy understands he has to produce more than he consumes. Even the lowlifes that collect welfare understand that genetically. Like squirrels are programmed to understand you have to produce more than you consume and set aside the difference. And that means capital keeps growing. That's good, very good. The second thing is, there are more scientists and engineers alive today, right now, than have lived in all Earth's history put together. And they're doing fantastic things.
And they can communicate instantly with each other.
Well, that's why Ray Kurzweil is right. If you live another 20 years, we may be living in the world of the Terminator on the one hand, but on the other hand, maybe we'll be able to live almost forever physically. So these things are cause for tremendous optimism, and I keep those things in my mind when I look at gloomy current economic statistics.
Okay, when you keep mentioning Ray, and I think I know who you're talking about. He's a life extension guy, right?
Well, much more than that, actually. He wrote a book called The Singularity is Near about, I don't know, 6-8 years ago. And basically, it explains how all of the world's technologies, we're talking robotics, nanotechnology, artificial intelligence, space exploration, genetic technology, all these things, are all advancing at an exponential rate. And of course, I would argue, he doesn't make this argument, I do, that actually technology has advanced at an exponential rate for the last 200,000 years since the old Stone Age. The number of inventions and the time between them, the number of inventions has been expanding radically, and the time between them has been collapsing. I mean, from the conquest of fire, wait 100,000 years, learn to nap flint. Okay, wait 10,000 years more, maybe you get the bow. And now there's new things being developed, hundreds of them every day. So it's almost like if we were in a huge stadium and a drop of water, you're on the top floor of the stadium and there's a drop of water at the bottom and it doubles in 30 minutes. Okay, you don't even notice it. But then in 15 minutes, it doubles again. And then in 7 minutes, it doubles again. So by the time you're overwhelmed and drowned, it takes place in a fraction of a second. if I'm being clear with that analogy.
No.
Like the rate of innovation. It's like the rate of innovation is almost like the Bitcoin graph the past like 3 months, where it's just going straight up. And if you go to, I think it's 2045.com, and this is some of the Ray Kurzweil type stuff, is where these futurists think that by, and this is their words, not mine, that basically by 2045, we're going to have a hologram avatar type situation. And this is some of the greatest minds, like I said, Ray Kurzweil. These are not...
We're already living in a simulation!
I mean, Ray Kurzweil, I think his quote was something along the lines of, I don't believe in God, but I'm going to become God. It was something along those lines, just paraphrasing.
You think you're going to make it, Doug? You're working to make it. I want you around for it, man. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, if... The thing about life extension and is that if you can live another 5 years, there are going to be developments that might allow you to live another 10 years beyond that. Now, if somebody aged 30 is listening right now, that's completely irrelevant to them. But if you're over 60 and the second law of thermodynamics is having its way with your body, you got to remember this, that every year you live, medical technology is probably extending your life by another 2 years. So it's a race against time at this point. But maybe from that point of view, time is on our side.
Yeah. No, Tim, it looks like, midlife's going to be 70. Don't laugh, man. I mean, I've seen this. I'm old enough. I was born in 61. So I'm telling you, man, I'm old enough to see how rapid technology goes from Pong on your TV to freaking AI. Now, that's another thing. Are you keeping track of quantum processing and computers and so on and artificial intelligence? Because that's going to be an exponential, I'm smart now in a day kind of thing, too.
Well, I know. We may live in the world of Skynet in the future, but actually this is the biggest single threat that I can think of to the cryptocurrency revolution. It's that when quantum computers become commonplace, or let's say practicable, the first people to have them are going to be the government and these agencies.
The bad guys.
And at that point, they're going to be able to do anything with them. And that's not going to inure to the benefit of the common guy. Although, I got to say, it's like gunpowder. To start with, the bad guys, the governments of the world, were the first ones to have gunpowder. But then the cat got out of the bag, and gunpowder was a huge liberating thing. Same thing with the printing press and so forth. So it's always good news, bad news.
Yeah, I'm counting on the good news overwhelming. What about, have you explored an international, man? You got really international solar system of asteroid mining kind of stuff? I mean, what are you thinking about the developments in space and such?
Oh, I'm all for it. One of the nice things about the government being bankrupt, which it is that they really can't afford to keep NASA going. Now people say, oh, that's horrible. Don't you want to explore space? Yes, I do.
Yeah, Trump's going to go to the moon again. Yay! Or not.
Well, the government shouldn't be doing that type of thing. It should be the various private space companies, the ones that are being run by
Jeff Bezos.
Bezos and by Musk and by who's the chap that runs
Branson?
Branson, right. And there will be others like that. That's where the future lies. They'll do things intelligently and economically. So, I have no question.
Are you invested in any of that? Are you paying attention? You got somebody looking at? Are you buying CubeSat company kind of stuff? I mean, what's your... Oh, yeah, Jim Cantrell up at Nexus. Colin's dad, man.
I was just about to come in with
that. Yeah, he has, Venture?
Vector.
Vector Launch Systems.
Space Systems.
Davi Barker from Bitcoin Up Bombs and I went down to a 3-hour show from their factory in Tucson making rockets to put CubeSats up. So I'm going, okay, there's that. So where are you putting your interest in? What are you looking at?
I don't like the stock market right now, which is how you invest in these things, because it's also bubbly. Everything is bubbly today because of all the money printing that's going on right now. So this is not a good time to invest in anything. quite frankly.
Stay right there, Doug. We'll be right back. From the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. See, that's what I need, Doug. I need hailing frequencies invisible to the Crown. That is the whole point of this, and that is the one thing they do not want you to have sure as hell with moving your money. So for me, it has always been a philosophical thing. And then they get into all this, like you say, they do the technical thing. I go, yeah, it's all very interesting, you know, how you do that. I go, does it do this? Does it keep me private? Does it keep me anonymous? Does it keep me secure? Does it keep me, you know, where they can't censor it? Does it? Well, you have to. And I go, then I don't care. I don't give a crap how whiz-bang your code is. If it doesn't free me as an individual, you're just enslaving me, and it's another link back to the chain to the Crown. I mean, no. So this philosophy, when we come back, I'm hoping that you can give us the philosophical basis by which you make these financial decisions. Do you have a faith or a belief in a philosophy of freedom that supports what you're doing? Or is it encounter to it? Or you're counting on the bad guys being bad? I mean, if you can clear the mind fog and have a certain philosophy to live a productive life, what would that be? Can you help me with that?
Yes, I think I can, Ernie.
All right, we'll do that when we come back. Yeah, Tim, go ahead and just yak it with Doug Casey. When do you get to do that?
When I was watching listening to the Ron Paul speak at Nexus Earth, I look over to me, I'm like, oh my God, it's Doug Casey right next to me. And then Ernie showed up. And so that was just awesome because I got to see all my heroes. Because, I mean, the first person that got me down this entire rabbit hole was really G. Edward Griffin. So, you know, getting to hear him talk was just, and seeing all my heroes up there was just absolutely amazing. And, you know, really appreciate, you know, all of your generosity. But I wanted to get back to your quantum.
But wait, Tim, let me ask you a question while I've got you here. Okay. Both of you guys know who is Cantrell, the guy that put this thing on. He spent a huge amount of money, very unproductively, I thought, except for us that went to this. It was good to meet some new people. Who is he? Where does he get his money?
This is actually
Colin Cantrell. I'm sorry, go ahead.
This is actually exactly where I was about. It's funny you mentioned this because it's exactly where I was going into this.
Yeah, 40 seconds.
Okay, so Colin Cantrell, he's the founder of Nexus Earth. So Nexus Earth is another cryptocurrency, and what they're trying to do is get ahead of quantum and making it quantum resistant, where they're basically, in layman's terms, being four times more secure with their algorithms than Bitcoin, because they see Bitcoin being very prone to when quantum comes on board. And so Colin's father is Jim Cantrell, who is the owner of Vector Space Systems, one of the original founders of SpaceX. And so I think he broke off from Elon, used his money to then start his own rocket launching company, where they're going to be launching cube satellites up into space. So he wanted to go with the smaller rockets because he thought that was going to be a much more productive use of his capital.
Because the blockchain nodes can be in space in sovereign territory 100 kilometers up and nobody can stop them. All right, here we're coming back.
.fm. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're right back, keeping Doug Casey. We got a chain around his ankle and a ball, and we're just having fun.
We're calling ourselves the government today.
Yeah. This is, you know, Doug. He was asking about the Nexus Earth, how that a whole bunch of money got spent on that. I'm sure, and we know we were helping promote it and so on from the beginning. Colin Cantrell is a young man. He's 26 years old, uber geek, super coder, musician. But I mean, he's one of those big brain guys. I'm sure you know a bunch of them. And He had a concept of what was going to be the future in cryptocurrencies because he understood blockchain and Bitcoin. He's going, well, I can see where the vulnerability is going to be. It's going to be here, 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 and here. So he's developing that. Well, you do an ICO, you put out, and all of a sudden, boom, you got, you know, tens of millions of dollars to develop the code, which is what he's doing now. The reason that he put this on is the awareness of it and the kind of conference that he put together just to get people to look at what he's doing. Well, of course, the Nexus stock, the crypto value goes way up. So he's doing fine. So he just, you know, putting on that conference, he didn't lose money. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's interesting. In other words, you think that conference, which cost him a lot,
made bunch of money for him. Bunch. Big giant ooh gobs.
Because it promoted the Nexus cryptocurrency enough?
Yep. I would say they probably didn't do a good enough job of having the, I mean, because Peter Schiff was there and he was talking about how, you know, the hurricane had just come through and kind of ravaged his entire operation out there because there's no more internet, there is no electricity. I'm like, well, we are at the Nexus Earth Conference. So what Nexus Earth is trying to do is they're going to have cube satellites 62 miles up out of into the atmosphere that's outside of any government jurisdiction.
Well, they're
going to
make use of it. His father and another company that they're working is going to own the ubiquitous Wi-Fi across the planet network, but it will allow for there to be block nodes, you know, in space. See, the thing is that freedom is only 62 miles away. We're not thinking three-dimensionally. You know, if you go up, you're just, and I'm done. That's what the Precariat is all about. You know, the ship, that's the name of it, the Precariat. You'll dig that. But I'm going, this is what we're emphasizing. If you think three-dimensionally, you just get out of their jurisdiction. You know, I got a satellite dish pointing up, and I got ubiquitous service all over the planet to do whatever the hell I want with. Mandan is not going to like that. Well, they set up Nexus cryptocurrency to take advantage of this and a lot of other philosophy on how it's mined and secured and all this and, you know, and all the crap that's wrong with it now. So that's why he put on this conference, bring attention to that. And a lot of those young crypto guys that were there for the Nexus crypto. And then you had all these other speakers talking about the economic framework that this is being built in. And all it did was just reinforce the philosophy that they had. It's philosophy in code. So that's my question to you, Doug. The philosophy, the code of philosophy that you run your life by is what? And it has to be a faith. I mean, you know, if you have belief just in making money, you can do that by buying Raytheon and encouraging wars. I mean, but you have another philosophy you go by. What is it?
Well, Ernie, like both of you guys, I believe in the non-aggression principle, which is don't aggress against other people's person or their property, number one. And number two, do what you say you're going to do. So that keeps it very simple. And that's what being a libertarian is all about. We don't need a library full of laws and regulations. The whole of the law is don't aggress against other people and their property and do what you say you're going to do.
You know, very simple. You know, that's one thing that I find interesting. You can help me with this. I ask this a lot. Is there a behavior that would be acceptable to all cultures worldwide? You're an international man. I mean, you come in and, you know, hey, you don't want to sleep with my wife? I mean, you're being insulting, and maybe, you know, like Eskimos or something. You won't take my horse, you know, it's Arabia. There, you got to, you know, whatever. You won't, you know, burp at the table? I mean, what, you didn't like the dinner? I mean, there's all these different cultures that, different norms that you go, I'm wondering what is a, you know, a continental man or international man that, you know, not the ugly American. How would you think these young people should present themselves and not get in trouble just about anywhere in the world?
Well, just by abiding those two principles, everybody intuitively understands it. If you don't aggress against people, okay, then you're not perceived as a threat. And when you follow through on what you say, don't lie, in other words, they tend to like you. So that's really all you need to know when you travel. Sure, there are local habits that you want to become familiar with, like eating habits and all kinds of things like that. But those are Those are trivial. So it's you can land anywhere in the world, and just by observing those two principles, do all that you say you're going to do and don't aggress against other people or their property, you're going to be way ahead of the rest of the world, because a lot of people don't even understand those basics.
Now, what do you find most people are? As you travel around the world and certainly doing some business, you know, the humanities culture is foundationally what? Just that? They just want to, you know, leave me aloneist? You know, I just, you know, yeah, we can voluntarily whatever. Are they all pretty much like that? And you get out of that with, I don't know, collective institutions like government or something? How would you rate humanity on your scale? I mean, are we going to be okay? Is there something that needs to be fundamentally changed? Do we need a special vaccine or a brain implant or something? I mean, you know, how's humanity doing?
Yeah, that's a big problem, Ernie. And here's the reason why. It's that people all over the world, governments have been getting bigger and bigger and more powerful over the last century. People look to government as being a cure-all. It's not, of course, because it's force, and force is never a good thing. But here's the real problem. It's that a certain percentage, there's something called Pareto's Law, the 80-20 rule. I think 80% of people are basically decent. 20% of people are on the borderline, and 20% of that 20% are criminal personalities. Now, the problem is, where do those criminal personalities tend to go? They tend to go to government, because they're interested in controlling other people, not in controlling physical reality so much. They want to control other people. So as time goes on, you get more and more criminal personalities going to work for government. I mean, it's been captured by these bad people that are just part of a standard distribution of human beings. So this makes me a little bit pessimistic for the future, quite frankly.
Well, I can see if it's just a encouragement, a philosophy that people understand their power of just wallet voting. I got in 03, I got walletvoting.com, and that's why I needed micro transactions, you know, for cryptocurrency. I want the kid in the Congo to be able to support. Yeah, I want to go to the moon. Somebody here, I'll give a nickel, and it didn't cost him $10 to do it, you know? Yeah. So here's a nickel. Let's go to the moon.
Yeah, and those kids in the Congo are not going to be using Bitcoin if it costs $20 to make a 10-cent transaction. And I just see Bitcoin getting hijacked by the globalists. And so this audience is obviously sophisticated enough to know the difference between Bitcoin and crypto. And that's where I've, you know, I'm not staking my future on Bitcoin. I'm staking my future on crypto in terms of, you know, I believe in this blockchain technology. But, you know, I'm not believing in Bitcoin where, you know, it's going to cost $20 to go send a nickel, you know, across the world or back to Africa. And that's my biggest problem with Bitcoin right now. But one thing a lot of people who are buying crypto don't realize, and even guys within my own office, I asked them, I'm like, well, have you ever sent it to anybody? They're like, no. And so I did a little experiment. I'm like, I'm going to send you Litecoin right now, which I should have waited a week because it went up 300%. I'm gonna send you Litecoin right now because it's going to cost me a penny. And they're like, well, why don't you send me Bitcoin? I'm like, because it could cost $20 to $25 or $5 or whoever, whatever maniac is in control of the blockchain at that second. And that's why I just don't see Bitcoin being viable. But it's almost this problem, reaction, solution where they've deliberately created this problem. The reaction is people like me and Ernie bitching. And the solution is, oh, here's the banks with the Lightning Network. And then it's leading right into what you've been talking about the whole time of, there you go, FedCoin.
Yeah, that is the big problem. It's that all these governments are jumping on this train, and they're trying to get rid of paper currency and replace it with digital currency. And that's going to be a super double disaster, because at that point, if you have to use a government digital currency, they totally know absolutely everything that you buy and sell and earn and borrow. And just with the stroke of a computer key, they can wipe out your assets or freeze them. And that's the way the world is going. And they can inflate the digital currency supply much more easily than they can inflate the currency supply in today's
And the other thing they do is they get people to
turns out that go ahead.
Oh, sorry. And the other thing they do is they get people to self-censor, because if I know all of my cash is on a government surveillance grid of, you know, some sort of global SDR, then they're going to get people like me and you to stop saying what we're saying, because all of a sudden all of our money can be turned off. And so, you know, it looks like it's inevitable that the future is going to be digital cash, and it's whether or not do you want digital cash that's controlled by the man, or do you want digital cash?
Oh, you're going to have the options.
Or do you want digital cash that's going to be, you know, on a cube satellite 62 miles up that can't be stopped? And that's where, you know, you had gotten into at the Nexus conference, that you'd sort of outsmarted yourself in Bitcoin, and it was really the Bitcoin as a transfer mechanism is why you really like that. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think that's what I remember from when I was part of your when I was sitting in your presentation.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. But this is going to be very problematical as these governments go to the digital currencies. It's going to compromise our freedom even more. I don't know where this is going to end, quite frankly.
You know, where it always ends, they, them, those won't leave me alone, and the people that want to be left alone doing everything they can to be left alone. And I'm going, it will not happen until, this is my thing. I tell you, you just out of grins and giggles, invest in, we're going to whip ass. It's going to be this, a decentralized, they can't stop it, they can't censor it, they don't know who put it up, they can't take it down, internet. And what we're working on now, I go, you can't be free until you could have actual catapult YouTube channels of catapulting kittens into swirl cactuses that nobody can take down. If it's child pornography or terrorists building bombs or whatever, nobody cares. But if you go after the cats, woo, there got to be a government agency to take down the cat videos. You see my point? So I'm just, when you can do that, then you're free. All right, here we're coming back.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Doug Casey, I have a show, a world without you. When they say without you, who you think they're talking about, Doug? Who are we going to live without?
Bad guys, the people that infest the state, that infest the governments of the world, people that want to tell everybody else what to do. Professional busybodies, they all go into government. There aren't any good people in government, quite frankly.
Ernie, do you want to tell me about the robots?
The robot what?
The pictures of robots.
Oh, yeah. You'll dig this. There was a story we had on Freedom's Phoenix that said, you know, it has been determined that 80% of government employees can be replaced with robots. And then a listener in Missouri sent me an email, and he goes, I say 100% of employees can be replaced with pictures of robots. So I'm going, yep, they get it. Okay. So this the singularity, artificial intelligence, smart kind of in quantum computing of they got perfect knowledge of, they got my Facebook, you know. And I how do you defend against stuff like that? What are you thinking that the future is going to be a threat to you? They know where Doug is, and for them not to know, or, you know, hiding in plain sight, or what?
I don't use a cell. I don't go on Facebook. I have a Facebook account that idiotically I set up years ago but I don't use it ever. I've got a LinkedIn account. I don't use it ever. I've got a cell phone. I only use it for making phone calls when I need to, and that's it. Look, the way the world is going is this. Have you heard about the social credit system that China has?
Yes. It's like you get a personal worship of the government citizenship rating or something.
Put it on your match.com. I'm a good citizen.
Yes, I'm 98% communist.
Exactly correct. In other words, they take not just the things that your credit rating, like Experian and those people have, that's part of it, but they take what you say, your views, where you live, what you drive, who your friends are, what your friends say, what their ratings are. And it's like a frequent player point game where you try to get the highest social credit rating that you can, and you do that by being a good little robotic citizen. Now, people are opting into that by the millions in China. They want to have the highest rating possible, which means they... Same thing is going to happen here in the U.S. It just proves people are sheep. So I don't think I'm going to do very well in that world.
It's sort of like when Paul Warburg said that there will be one world government. It's only a matter if it's through consent or conquest. And now you've got all these idiots who are literally consenting and begging. They're not. It's even worse than that. They're begging for this.
Yeah, give me a universal basic income. I want my matrix gruel, everything a body needs, man, in my sea container next to the public transit system. I mean, this is my thing, Doug. I'm going to get what they want. They have to change us. I mean, as human beings, they have to change us mentally, physically, philosophically, something. I mean, there has to be some kind of a DNA shifting retrovirus vaccine, something in the air, water, food, something. They have to change us to change the nature of being human to accept this kind of thing. And if they can, they are. I mean, you know, do you feel a threat that way? Is there a human spirit? Gattaca is always going to come out and amongst all this stuff, and they just got to be killed and squashed, or will rise up? Is the conflict a coming?
Yeah, well, that's a deeply philosophical question.
Yep.
And the reason I say that is because it gets to the very nature of being a human being. And the question is this, is are people simply biological entities, in which case the genes can be reprogrammed and so forth, or are we actually spiritual entities that inhabit a body? Now, apparently most of the people on this planet believe in religions, Christianity, Islam, what have you.
The government, right.
But most of the people on this planet, I'm an atheist, and atheists are the most disliked single group in the world, I understand. Nobody likes or trusts atheists. I don't care if I admit it, but the thing is, it's a conflict with this question I just asked. I said, well, are we really spiritual entities that inhabit a body? In other words, we don't have a soul. We are a soul and just use a body. But when you talk about that with religious people, they blow you off. I mean, I don't know what the facts are. I mean, I just don't know. But that's the basic question.
You know, as I get older, Doug, see if this, you can confirm this thought process. As I get older and gone through, you know, read the Bible straight through, raised our kids in church and so on, you're just looking for the truth. And I'm telling you, the truth is more and more, even my atheist friends and science and everything, we're more connected than people think. There's another level of our minds may even, you know, be outside of our body and our brains and antenna or something. I just feel that there's some hardwiring the bad guys keep plucking to make us, you know, kind of look that way, fear or need to worship or express ourselves or something. There's something hardwired in the Illuminati secret handbook, secret handshake club of we rule people and this is how you do it. And I'm going, I think there's much more connectivity between human beings and our minds as one thing, an avatar thing or something. I'm just feeling way more spiritual as humanity than I think even religious people give credit. It's just a biological thing. Is that you starting to feel that as you get older?
Well, is it biological or is it something more than that?
And I have no idea.
Well, I don't know. I don't either. This is what I'm asking. But if you claim to be a Christian, I presume that's the case, Ernie, then presumably you believe you have a soul. Although, if you believe that, that's the wrong way to look at it. You'd have to, it's more correct to say, I am a spiritual entity and I have a body, rather than I'm a body and I have a soul. But if you actually are a Christian, then you have to believe you have a soul.
You know,
and therefore,
well, see, that's the thing. You say that. You have to believe. See, that's the problem with all these religions. Oh, you did it wrong. You know, I'm going, no. I'm. If you're looking for the truth, I did a debate with Stefan Molyneux, and he was like, it was at Pork Fest, and it was like, you know, you're too stupid to be libertarian if you believe in any kind of anything. And I'm going, look, that is the stupidest thing ever, is for these young kids coming in, looking for the truth, and you're shutting them down. Oh, no, if you believe, let them look. What do you care? You know, they'll find out if you encourage them to seek truth. They'll look for truth instead of looking for fairy tales. You know, I don't have to believe in Santa Claus, you know, but there are some fundamental scientific support. I've got my mind open. And as time goes on, I'm just feeling that there's more, like you're saying, you know, I don't have to believe. Well, Christian, you have a body with a soul. I got a soul with a body. That doesn't bother me one freaking bit.
Well, As I said, I don't believe in religion and I don't believe in God. But that doesn't preclude me from wondering about issues that these religions are supposed to confront, but they don't. They just spew out dogma.
And go Bob the Arabs and freaking America and support the troops. And
this conversation is not helping out our social credit score.
Right. You know, we're not doing it. All right, Doug. I want to give you an opportunity to, you know, express what you mean by this, you know, a soul inhabiting a body, because you're emphasizing that we're more than just this biological organic pile of carbon and water. I mean, you know, what are you thinking?
Well, I don't know, actually, Ernie. I don't know. It's philosophically, I've always been a solipsist. Most people don't know what that is. A solipsist is somebody who basically believes that all of reality is a creation of your imagination, and that if you think something, you can make it happen.
Boom! Now,
I think Karl Rove has a quote like that. You know, I know we are the actors. We're the ones who are creating our own reality.
Karl Rove.
But in terms of, you know, they're going to engineer the government to rule us.
Yeah. You know, see, my thing is, I call it quantum reality. I really just, you know, emphasize this to my wife. And I'm going, look, over our lifetime, I'm going, look, if I take one step towards something, if I actually start doing it and I support something, it happens. Because, you know, welcome to my world. I mean, I associate with people like Doug and Tim and all these guys. You know, we are thinking this, therefore it will happen. You're building a 900-foot-long airship? That'll not go. You know what? Watch. And I'm just like, you know, it's just, if you can take a step towards it, you show the technology that can support it, you get the positive mindset, you plow through all the bureaucracy and the doubt, and everything. It just manifests itself, whatever you think of. And Doug, with a little bit of resources and a little bit of confidence and a little bit of, you know, vision, you've had this concept supported over and over in your life, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, very much. I don't like to feel limited by anything, certainly not by the government and the kind of people that populate it and pass its laws, but I don't even like to feel limited by the reality that's around us. I mean, the thing that look, when humans were, you know, came into being probably a couple hundred thousand years ago, when Homo sapiens evolved, I mean, it's been vision and a grasp of technology that's changed the world from beating on Earth with a stick to being able to go to the other planets at this point. So, yes, I'm all for that.
Yeah, well, I'm looking for, you know, a spiritual realization over time that you've kind of you lived through. There's just a humanity has a good. Are they born in sin and evil? Are they generally good, and it's just some evil force of beating it out of, kind of like Wonder Woman comes to battle Eris or whatever? I mean, I it's a good evil thing, and how do you define between the two? And I'm like, look, you wonder who they, them, those are? The ones who won't leave me alone. I mean, it's that simple to me. But I'm wondering what you think humanity occupies, what philosophical space as they come out of the womb. Are we engineered to be socialists? You know, are we evolving to something else? Are we autonomous? I mean, what does sentience do? Is artificial intelligence going to go, God, you guys, man, you're bugs. You need to be squashed. You're a virus on the planet Skynet. You see my point?
Yeah, I absolutely see it. And actually, this is what we're dealing with in our series of novels.
Okay, wait. Hold that. We're coming right back. I'm going to start right there. Okay, it's the last segment. Here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
William Wallace, you stand in taint of high treason.
Against whom?
Against your king. Have you anything to say?
Never in my whole life did I swear allegiance to him.
It matters not. He is your king. Confess, and you may receive a quick death. Deny, and you must be purified by pain. Do you confess? Do you confess? Then on the morrow you shall receive your purification.
It matters not. He is your king. That's what we're really dealing with here. It's, you know, your opinion don't mean squat. You know, it's that. So living the life of international, if I'm not here, you know, I can see, you know, Doug Casey has been advocating, well, keep your business in one country and yourself in another and your resources in another, kind of split it up so you're not like a cash cow. You know, that helps, you know. But the line of thought that we were going right before we came back, Doug, continue on that, will you please?
Well, this is one reason why I've gone to writing fiction as opposed to nonfiction, because it's easier to explore these philosophical issues. Plus, certain things that you best not or even dare not say in nonfiction. So one of the things that we're going to explore towards the end of this series of novels is, are people basically good or evil? Because our hero, Charles Knight, has to launch a preemptive strike against the rest of the world. And I figure that probably 80% of humanity is going to have to die. But that's the bad news. The good news is that it's going to be the first war in human history that only the bad guys die. Why? Because if they died, they were bad guys. It turns out that there may be a genetic mutation that make people act like evil chimpanzees, as opposed to nice bonobos, if you get my reference.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of what Bill Gates is doing. We got to have vaccines and make everybody live longer. Yes, protect you from this. It's to get and the alliance. You know, two by two hands of blue. Get the people in service of the man. And if you're not, you're dead. You know, I'm wondering, what you're thinking. You think there's a genetic code marker? We're gonna get all the bad guys out.
Well, it's a good question, and it gets back to that earlier question, is if people really are spiritual beings, then it's not going to solve anything. But if we're strictly biological, yeah, it could solve something. If you can wipe out these destructive traits that infest humanity at this point, busybodyism.
Okay, now you have governments, if they wanted to have traits, what would they want? They want compliant, subservient, equilibrium, take this drug, take this vaccine, take this, TV programming.
Be a good little slave.
Yeah, be a good little slave. I mean, of course that's what they want, but I don't see how that produces what they want, you know, a society that's vibrant, it just kind of, it's like we go have a war, but only a few people make the money. It's at least when you have Hans Hermann Hoppe, I remember him at a Freedom Summit, he goes, well, you want a monarchy because there's only one guy to take out, and he's fighting the wars for economic gain. You know, not just a, you know, so I'm just, what philosophy should the government do to benefit even them? I don't think they know. They're this making you all automatons. How does that even serve what they think they want?
Well, look, if you're a farmer, you don't want to have wild sheep in your herd. You want domesticated sheep. There's a world of difference between wild sheep and domesticated sheep.
Yeah.
So that's what they want. They're easy to control, and they work in that direction. And they really do see themselves, these deep state people that live within the Beltway and the equivalent in every country in the world, they really do see themselves as better and different than all of you hoi polloi out there, or as the Romans, you capita censi, headcount out there. So they actually see themselves as being a different species. And it's interesting because these political people are tending to each other now.
Hey, you dropped your, pulled out your mic or something. There you go.
Oh, yeah, because these political people are tending to even mate with each other like a separate species. It's like the young Chelsea Clinton is mating with another powerful political person. All their children tend to mate with the children of other rich and powerful politically oriented families. So whatever bad character traits they have are being reinforced, just like you mate winning racehorses with each other to increase your chances of getting another one. Not that they're winning racehorses. I mean, but that's happening, actually, at this point. I mean, it's why I've always hated royalty. I mean, they say royal blood flows in our veins. I despise royalty. They're a criminal class, and they tend to mate with each other throughout history. They always have, and it's happening here in the U.S. now, too.
And that's going to lead to interbreeding, which then makes them get even crazier and even more psychopathic. And
well, just psychologically self-reinforcing, because they go, you know, crime doesn't pay. They go, yeah, it does. You know, so it keeps you know happening. And I'm wondering how you think the end battle is going to come out. I mean, the people are going to rise up because they can, they want to, or will they even? You know, what is the spark? And a lot of people were, you know, pretty, you know, sour until, you know, Ron Paul demonstrated that there was an entire generation, a spontaneous ordered generation of leave me alone-ism. And I think that scared the crap out of the bad guys. What kind of influence you think Ron Paul's effort had on this whole thing?
Oh, an excellent influence. I'm a big fan of Ron's. But the problem is that they say, I don't think anybody knows, but about a third of the U.S. population is on various psychologically, psychiatrically active drugs, Zoloft and Paxil and Prozac, and there's 100 of these things that are turning people into zombies. And that's not even counting the so-called opioid crisis, where people are trying to escape from their painful lives by hiding in a magic dream world. So when people are that drugged up, you know, they don't tend to revolt. And when people basically believe everything they hear on the mainstream media and accept it, they're not going to revolt against their government because they think their government is the good guys. So I'm not terribly optimistic.
At least now some people are starting to realize that there is the fake news. And so if anything that Trump has done, it's helping change the culture of now you've got, at least got a mass of people who, you know, 4 years ago, they were still buying into a lot of the mainstream media crap. And now it's 4 years later and they're still, you know, have the certain amount of indoctrination and can't, you know, they're not necessarily on the Doug Casey level, but they're starting to realize, you know, hey, you know, the people on TV are not my friend. It's called programming for a reason. And so as people start to realize that, you know, the mainstream media is the fake news, at least now there's some sort of glimmer of hope, but part of the problem is that people then think, you know, oh, well, Fox News, well, they're the alternative. And we're kind of getting into this yesterday, but, you know, Fox News, you know, they're not your friend either. And so if there's any glimmer of hope that I have is at least now people are starting to realize that the news is crap, and these are some of the same people that 4 years ago, you know, were buying into everything hook, line, and sinker. So at least there's some glimmer of hope, but you know, everything right now is too little, too late. The cake has already been baked into this economy of the next recession, and that's why I'm just trying to look at the future and looking at, you know, how do we build up the economy for, you know, for Bitcoin and for blockchain to be able to not have to worry about what these people think.
I agree with you, Tim. There's definitely cause for optimism as well.
Well, the optimism, I know you have pessimism, but based on what? It's just a bad guys just keep a coming and the good guys can't keep ahead? Or are you encouraged with technology and such, and there's any evidence that, you know, we kind of blaze past them? This is my word picture, Doug. You like this. I go, I'm going down, it's a kind of sunset in my rearview mirror down the highway, Arizona, Lone Desert, I'm going, and I look in my rearview mirror, and I see and hear the woo-ah car. It's a state going woo-ah, 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 trying to catch up, and it's a step on accelerator a little bit, and they slip over the horizon, we go plaid and forget they were even there. I mean, I don't want to be concerned about their actions, and you going and creating entire countries out in the Pacific. I mean, that's optimism for me, man. I'm in. What can I do to help?
Well, perhaps we'll call upon you in some way if I meet with a measure of success on this next little junket that I'm going on. But, you know, all over the world, there are cameras that feed into central computers controlled by the government. And as artificial intelligence is perfected, they'll be able to identify absolutely everybody by face recognition, Where they are, what they're doing. You know, and meanwhile, the rich are getting richer and more concentrated. And the rich guys are generally guys that are working in and around the government because they're first to get that fire hose of money that's flowing out of the Federal Reserve. But I'm painting a gloomy picture. There is some cause for optimism as well. It's just that right now, the bad guys are winning at this moment.
Winning what? See, I want to know what they're determining to win. It's, you know, how many people are under their spell? And I kind of look at, you know, the glass is half full, how many people are breaking away? And I'm... And like you say, Africa and Asia and Malaysia and all the, you know, India. I mean, there's a lot of countries like, you know, India going cashless and so on. But I'm wondering how many, like Arab Spring and so on, how many people get made aware? They're just kind of on the sidelines. They don't really understand. They don't get it. And all of a sudden they come across a Doug Casey and they're like, what the hell? I didn't even know this. This has already been matured. This levolution, you know, this crypto renovation of what's possible. I mean, all these things, you create more and more of you, and they just by, there's a critical mass, I think, it just kind of overwhelms the bad guys, because I think they exist on such a small margin. It's kind of like Walmart, the biggest giant boxes, they'll never, and then the next one will be Amazon, and what, but what happens is they're on such a slim margin, you change public opinion just a little bit, and they go, nah, I don't like that anymore. I'll use this one. I'll do this. I won't shop there. I'll go over here. Just public opinion, the boycott, or just the mental, it's not cool anymore, or I want to rather be over here or use this. Just public general opinion has so much power, in my opinion. What's your opinion?
Well, how many Twitter subscribers do the Kardashians have? I understand. I may be wrong, but they have more than anybody else in the world.
Probably.
I mean, like 100 times more than Ron Paul has. So maybe that's the best statistical and factual indication of where humanity is.
Well, I'm wondering, humanity, But I'm not worried about it. My job, how are you going to save him? You know, why should I save you? I'm looking for me, you know, and my family, my loved ones, my grandchildren. I just want the, you can, you know, you want to lick the boot that's stomping you, knock yourself out. Do I have to? You know, I'm going 62 miles up. Now what? I'm out in the ocean. Now what? You know, I'm out in the yacht of, I went in Cafe Jate and wherever Doug Casey said, the island of whatever. Now what? You know, I just want to be left alone. You want to go be a slave? Be a slave. I don't give a crap. And but you come after me. Oh, ho, ho, ho. We got like, you know, the spaceships and stuff or something. I mean, I'm just wondering, you know, they're against my imagination. They lose. I'm telling you, man, I am. And the fact that I get inspired by the Solomon Islands. When are you going there? When are you going to have some news?
I'm thinking I'm going to go there the end of February. The problem is that I'm not going to go on a wild goose chase to the other side of the world unless I'm absolutely sure that the Prime Minister is going to set aside a couple of days and also to talk to his ministers and so forth, where I can actually do a number on these guys and try to convince them to, you know, because the way these people are, they speak pidgin English. You fella, me fella, plenty too much good, that kind of language.
Yeah.
That's actually the national language of the country. In fact, the national language of the country is in pidgin. Do you know how you say Prince Charles in pidgin? Well, you don't.
Vampire.
I'll tell you. It's number one pickaninny blonde queen.
Whoa, and that's awesome.
That is awesome, isn't it? And you know, a piano in pidgin is Big Bacchus, white tooth, black tooth. You kill him, he sing out. That's a piano in pidgin. I mean, so this is what we're dealing with there. This is not going to be easy. And if the invitation for a dinner in a five-star restaurant in Brisbane, which is the nearest civilized place, about 3 hours flight away. I mean, when he has an appointment with me, because these people are not very responsible. So, yes, the answer to the question is end of February, but I want to get these people tied down. I don't want to waste too much of my time, because basically the capital of the Solomons is, a gentle description, is shithole.
Well, this is, I'm sure they'd be susceptible at least meeting. Would you be willing to come on again and tell us about your meeting? That'd be awesome.
Also sounds like our capital shithole. So, put it in a different sense.
You going to come on and share, Doug?
Sure. No, I'll basically, we'll know whether I've been there, come and gone, in March. So if you want, I can come back.
Boom!
And,
done. Done, 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 done. All right, hey, thanks for staying the extra hour, man. We got to get to our next guest. Doug, it's always great to hang out with you, man. I was really happy to see you up in Aspen and looking so spry. You know, you're doing well, man. I thought you may have been, you know, getting older, but you're not. You're getting younger, man. Whatever you're doing, keep doing.
Got to wait for
Thanks, Ernie.
No, thank you so much, Doug. If anything, if it's any sign of hope and optimism, if you've got a guy like myself who was born in 86, you know, after you wrote these books, and so here I am picking up these books, watching everything you're doing, and so thank you for everything, and I really appreciate your time today. Thank you, sir.
Well, and I appreciate your saying that, Tim. Thank you very much.
Bye, Doug. It's awesome. Talk to you again soon. I definitely, Mark will be, Donna will start pinging you, and we'll get it taken care of, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye.